Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Our big baseball morning continues here on the Bernstein and McKnight Show. I'm Connor. He's Rich Campbell in for Dan. We head out to the phone lines now and are joined by the familiar voice of Len Casper, who covers the Cubs on television and really for us, too, in the playoffs, which has been a bunch of fun. And hopefully that's where the Cubs are headed again. Len, I know the All-Star break is a time for you broadcasters to just relax and like check back in with your families and remember everybody's names. But I wonder if you'll be involved in watching the Home Run Derby this year. It sounds like there's going to be a pair of Cubs there and something to watch for.
Yeah, this would be probably the one year where I would pay attention to the Monday night festivities. I tend to Tuesday morning look at the recaps, but it would be pretty fun to have Baez and Schwarber in it for sure. But you just want to make sure they don't mess with their swing too much, because you often hear that, right? That players come out of the All-Star break after a home run derby, and then we tend to track their home runs, and sometimes it doesn't always work out. But I trust that they'll handle it the right way, and I think it's really cool that the Cubs will be well represented.
Len, we asked Jed Hoyer this. Who you got, Javi or Schwarber?
My gut tells me Javi. Okay. I've seen him in batting practice. It just feels like he hits a higher percentage of home runs in BP. I could be wrong. I'm not going to doubt Schwarber, but if you're going to put me on the spot, I think Javi's got a pretty good chance. I just never would doubt Javier Baez in any sort of home run competition.
No, the guy swings from the heels all the time, and it's a pretty comfortable thing for him. I wonder, Len, you know, we talked with Jed, too, about the lineup as it's existed without Chris Bryant. Is there a way you could characterize what we've seen? I mean, because there have been comeback wins, there have been bullpen wins, there have been, you know, unlikely guys contributing, and then there have been the usuals, too. Is there a way that you've seen these guys behave without Chris that necessarily strikes you?
Just everybody's been really good. Rizzo has come up with big hits and big RBIs, even though the overall numbers have not been good. You know, you look at what David Bote has done in Chris's absence. Ian Happ has probably been, over the last two or three weeks, the Cubs' best offensive player. I mean, his on-base percentage is, I think, like 550 or above that over the last couple of weeks, taking a lot of walks, really squaring up the ball. Kyle Schwarber's had a very nice first half. Jason Hayward has continued to do what he's done over the last 6 weeks. I think Addison Russell has kind of found his groove. So you just go top to bottom. Ben Zobrist, you know, Ben's put together almost an all-star type first half very quietly. And then Wilson Contreras, I think we've seen really good signs from him in terms of the power game over the last couple of weeks. So I think it's just been a collective group effort without KB, and having him back and hopefully everybody rolling a little bit will be nice. It's been tough to score runs in this series. The Giants have pitched really well, but I think the Cubs feel fortunate that they've got a chance with a win today to take 2 out of 3.
Len, I want to get your take on this. We can ask Joe Maddon this at noon when he joins the show, but what effect do you think batting third has had on Baez?
I'm not sure it really matters that much where he hits. I think he is just going to be himself kind of regardless whether he's the leadoff guy batting eighth or hitting third. Some other people might give you a different answer, but I generally think, and I think Joe believes this too, that most guys are who they are. And lineup construction in general might be overrated, but if you're Joe Maddon, it's one of the big parts of your day is to figure out where everybody's going to hit. And, you know, on that front, I think it will be interesting to see where Bryant fits in today specifically. I think ultimately he's probably your number three hitter ahead of Rizzo, but you might want to leave Baez right where he is. Hayward has done such a nice job in the two spot. So if Joe wants to ease Bryant back into things, he could possibly hit him fifth. That's probably as low as you would want to hit Chris Bryant. But my guess is he'll end up back in that three spot once it's all said and done.
He's Len Kasper here on the Bernstein and McKnight Show. Rich Campbell in for Dan. Len, I saw this from Joel Sherman of the New York Post on Twitter. Over 1,200 players have been used in games so far this year. Before 1999, never had 1,200 players been used, and the number of total players used in Major League Baseball has gone up every year since 2012, with a record 1,358 last season. Does that mean anything in particular to you when it gets to the Cubs, when the idea that, you know, they've used 15 arms, I think 16 arms actually out of the bullpen, and granted, maybe it's not been as much as some teams who are floundering in the American League, not going anywhere, you know, churning through a roster a little bit, but you know, the game we're seeing now is so starkly different from even 6 years ago.
Yeah, I think it says a couple of things. Number one, the 10-day disabled list, I think, matters. Teams are much more willing to pull the trigger and put a guy on the DL than they were when it was 15 days. That's number one. And number two, just the bullpen shuttle from AAA to the big leagues. And I think most teams have utilized that to the nth degree. Now, when you make a move like that, you know, a guy who gets sent out can't come back within 10 days unless there's a DL move. And then because we have a lot of DL moves, those guys oftentimes are allowed to come right back to the roster. So it's almost a makeshift taxi squad, right, in a way. And I think the Cubs have utilized that well. And the bottom line is, because you're using so much bullpen, you have to make sure you have some fresh arms out there. And it's forced the Cubs at times to bring guys back, send them out, bring them back again. Dylan Maples has done that a few times, Justin Hancock, and a few other guys. And fortunately, you know, the Randy Rosarios, and even though Anthony Bass is on the DL, I think he's become a pretty entrenched part of this bullpen for now. You know, guys who've gotten limited opportunities have expanded those chances into very important roles on this staff.
Speaking of the bullpen, what stood out to you last night about the way the Cubs staff finished that game?
Well, number one, Brandon Morrow, with 2 days off after a busy weekend, Joe has really committed to not overusing the closer here in the first half. I do think at times he will push him a little harder in the second half, but just making sure that Morrow is fresh and you know, not a guy who you're going to overuse too much. And the ability to have a Steve Cishek in your back pocket with, I believe, something like 130 career saves. He looked very comfortable in that role last night. I thought Justin Wilson was very good. And the guy of the night was Carl Edwards Jr., who struck out the side. And to have him back and going at his best, man, that just makes everybody out there better.
That was some electric stuff.
Curveball.
We've seen it before, but my goodness. This San Francisco series has kind of been reminders of how good three of those particular pitchers are in Hendricks and Quintana and Edwards last night.
Yeah, that was one of the most impressive inning we've seen from a Cubs pitcher all season long, for sure.
We talked, Len, a couple of weeks ago about the trade deadline and what the Cubs may need, and you and I both have bullpen, more than likely. A lot of teams in the contending spots will need some bullpen arms, but the idea that they're going to have to deal off the 25-man roster for what is really kind of the first big time this season sticks with me. And I wonder, you know, as we get closer and closer to the break here and to the deadline, if you think that's as likely as ever before.
I don't know. You know, I don't quite know how they view position player wise, what they have and what they need. My gut tells me that they're very comfortable with this group, and especially having David Bodie kind of, again, in your back pocket, whether or not he ends up going back to AAA with Chris Bryant returning today remains to be seen, but whether he's sent back or not, he's going to be a big part of this thing moving into the second half. And I think, you know, Tommy La Stella off the bench, I think, you know, Joe having to make really tough decisions almost on a daily basis, who plays, who sits, means you have a starting caliber player available off your bench late, whether it's a Zobrist or a Happ or a Schwarber or an Almora. These are really good problems to have. And, you know, if you decide that, hey, we want to have a guy who can come off the bench and steal a base, or we want to have a guy come off the bench and hit a home run. You know, those are the two things you might tweak a little bit to improve your chances that way. But in terms of professional at-bats coming off the bench, I feel like this is one of the better constructed rosters the Cubs have had in recent memory. And then the other part is just injuries. You want to cover yourself in case one of your big guys goes down in an area where you feel a little vulnerable. Fortunately, when Chris Bryant got hurt, the Cubs were covered. They had a lot of depth at that position. Knock on wood, you just want to make sure your shortstops are healthy. That's a real tough position to cover. I think the catcher position is another one. But for the most part, I think the roster you see now, position player-wise, is pretty much what you're going to see toward the end of the year.
On the pitching side, though, Len, the Cubs obviously covering for Yu Darvish's continued absence. And in talking to Jed Hoyer this morning, used the word uncertainty, talked about needing more time to really gauge how his recovery can affect what they do at the deadline. Mike Montgomery at least has helped with that, although a bit of a rough patch lately. What are you looking for him this afternoon?
Yeah, I think just trying to continue to make sure that he stays in his routine. He commented on it the other day that he's not bouncing back quite like he did before because he's in a different role. And while you do get time off in between starts, I think it's the 95-100 pitch outings that do take it out of you, especially a guy who's been used to shorter outings, being used more often in previous years. This is the role he's always coveted, and I think he has really done a nice job and has proven that he can definitely be a regular part of a five-man rotation. So I think the Cubs feel really good about what Mike has done to this point. Tyler Chatwood's start this week I think is really important based on the fact that it's been a big struggle the last couple of weeks. But the big narrative, and you guys referenced it earlier, is the Hendricks-Quintana tandem so far in this series has been terrific, and they're going to need those guys to be that good in the second half, especially with Darvish out, to make a big run.
Cubs have Wilson Contreras as an all-star. He won't be in the home run derby, but will start the game. You've seen him come up. You've broadcast every game of his pretty much. I wonder, as he came up, it was different watching him behind the plate. There was a lot of energy, and there remains that kind of energy. What's the biggest thing that stands out to you most about his development over this time? The thing that he's either improved on or changed most that really speaks loudly?
Well, I think just learning the pitching staff, knowing, especially this year with the new visit rules, when to head to the mound, and taking charge, kind of being the captain behind the plate. I think that's been the biggest development we've seen. I think his pitch framing and being quiet back there is still a work in progress, but we have seen improvements. And the good thing, guys, is that he's working with maybe the best in the business in terms of catching gurus in Mike Borzello. Mike is so good in terms of strategy and game planning, and even the mechanics of catching, that I think the Cubs feel that relationship has really blossomed. And, Mike deserves a lot of credit as well for Wilson becoming an all-star catcher. But it's a great story. I mean, a guy who really wasn't anywhere on the radar. He wasn't even a catcher when he got to the Cubs as a teenager. And all of a sudden, about 3 years ago, won the Southern League batting title, and not only jumped onto the radar, but became almost immediately the number one catching prospect in baseball, joined a World Series champion in 2016, took over the reins last year, and all of a sudden has become one of the best in the business. It speaks to his perseverance and his ability to figure it out at this level, and he's just a joy to watch.
Len, as always, great talking with you. We'll let you get back to San Francisco. Any plans for the All-Star break, traveling Oahu, taking the kids somewhere? I mean, you have so much time in between the last game and the next one against the Cardinals.
Being home as much as possible is the
goal.
There you go.
Maybe a nap?
We've been on the road a lot over the last 6 weeks or so it'll be nice just to kick my feet up and hang with the fam.
Enjoy it. You deserve it. We'll talk to you again soon.
All right, Connor. Rich, thanks, guys.
Thanks,
that
Len.
Is Len Casper, television voice of the Cubs. You can find him on Twitter, @LenCasper, of course. Yeah, we're talking just before we had Len on, Rich, about that All-Star break. It's been kind of a topic of conversation, what with Joe, a little upset with the scheduling of this, but it's It's the three games in San Diego after tomorrow's off day, then 3 days off for the All-Star game, in which, you know, Wilson Contreras, John Lester, and Javi Baez are all going to participate. Plus, there's the Home Run Derby that adds Kyle Schwarber onto things. And then the Cubs and Cardinals are the only game in the business on Thursday. It is a three-day All-Star break for the Cubs.
The consolation prize is an off day in San Diego, though.
If you choose
that's the consolation prize.
That's true. It's a nice weather town. But then, you know, if you want to spend some time with the family, you got to fly. Or unless you've flown the family. See, that's what you do. You fly the family out to San Diego. Hang out there.
Stay.
Spend your All-Star break down there. Nice little place. Maybe do some deep-sea tuna fishing. You know, something like that off the wharf if you're crazy. Violate a contract or two.
Well, you're eating those tacos at the very least.
That's what you do?
Yeah.
All right. It's a decent enough plan. He's Rich Campbell. I'm Connor McKnight. We had a lot to do this morning, and we've done a lot, and we're only an hour and change into it. Joe Maddon's going to join us at noon like he missed yesterday. Back in for today, we have rescheduled our Joe Maddon hit. Chris Ranji from St. Louis, and of course, these airwaves here, is going to join us at 11:40. We're going to dive into some of the Bears stuff, too, at 11. Training camp is around the corner. I mean, it's coming up, and
it's a week from tomorrow.
Yeah, you know exactly where it's marked on your calendar, I'm sure. But you've got some interesting stuff about Matt Nagy and Mitch Trubisky and exactly how the two of them have been working together and will need to work together as the season kind of approaches closely. We'll get to that at 11 as well. Trade deadline stuff, though, has begun to percolate. Rich Campbell is an Orioles fan. He has been brought up a fan of the bird, and we've got some stuff about Manny Machado that's been driving the market some. And
the
some
season
new
finally started.
It has. For the Orioles, yes. It has finally started. But there's some news there on that end, on the top end of the trade market. We'll get to that when we come back. Segment brought to you by Spot Hero. Finally, here's a way you can save time parking. Use Spot Hero anytime you park. First-time users can enter the promo code SMART for $10 off. Spot Hero, park smarter. It's Bernstein and McKnight, 670 The Score.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
Yeah, it's a decent enough way to start any sentence that's going to involve Manny Machado. Oh boy, two game-tying home runs last night for the Orioles, and he remains the centerpiece of any trade deadline conversation in Major League Baseball. I'm Connor McKnight. He's Rich Campbell in for Dan Bernstein. It is the Bernstein and McKnight Show here on 670 The Score. We got you until 1 o'clock. Had Jed Hoyer on to start the show. Not a bad way to lead things off. He let us know that things are looking good for Chris Bryant. The expectation is that Joe's got the lineup out with KB's name in it. If not now, then likely soon. Of course, Joe texts those lineups the night before, so hopefully by the time we've got him on at noon, he's got a lineup set and ready to roll. I would imagine checkups for KB are an important thing. He's flying in today, but it seems like everything's good to go for him.
And we'll see where he hits, right? I mean, Jed basically said he's going to play. They've got the day off tomorrow in San Diego, so he called it a perfect opportunity just to get him back in the swing of things, then take a day of rest. Then he'll have three games, and then the All-Star break again. So it makes a lot of sense to get him back today. And by all accounts, did well in his rehab assignment. So
yeah, I mean, a couple of knocks looked good. Mick Gillespie was on with Molly and Handley, 2 days ago after he hit the home run in his first rehab start, saying everything looks like Chris Bryant, which is exactly how you want it to look. Meanwhile, I was told, Rich, that you are an Orioles fan heading into our three shows together here this week.
I just want to say that I love Manny Machado.
And you should.
And I do.
And your love for him is pure, I assume.
And you know what would make me love him even more, just would seal it, is if he brings back a terrific haul of prospects. It's time to set Manny free.
Well, that's the question,
yes.
Isn't it? I mean, then the reports are this morning that not only the Yankees get in on things. And
we've got a Yankees-Red Sox bidding war on Manny Machado.
That's where we're
at
now.
Sign me up.
We've got, this is the fascinating part to me, because Dan and I were talking about Manny Machado and the Orioles and their reluctance to deal him last season or how hard it was to find a deal. I think this should have been done last season. And I think as much as you've got every elite organization in Major League Baseball looking to try and bring in a player that is that good, as much as the Cubs would probably like to be involved in a conversation there if the price is right, the one way the Orioles get out of being somewhat somewhat dysfunctional, somewhat unsure of themselves as they approach this deadline, the last one before Machado's a free agent, is if they're able to spur up bidding wars between some of the AL's most elite programs. If that's the Yankees and Red Sox bidding against each other, so be it. If that's getting the Dodgers involved in the National League, that's great too. Even still, every day that you go without trading Manny Machado is a day that the next team doesn't have him. And there's, you know, as much as you might want top prospect X, Y, or Z, or maybe want to get yourself, you know, an arm that is just debuted. Maybe if the Brewers are in and Corbin Burnes, who threw last night for his, you know, first outing, who looked good, maybe if that's a guy that you're looking to get the top end, the prices seem to me to want to come back.
So Manny is doing his part. And that's, as an Orioles fan myself, that's one thing that works in their favor. As you mentioned, two home runs last night in a comeback win over the Yankees. He's got 23 homers. He's hitting .314. His OPS is .960. Whoever gets him is getting an absolute stud. You know, we talked about this at the break while we were off the air that I like him at third base more than shortstop.
I think a lot of people do.
Yeah, the defensive performance
mostly
backs that
everybody
up.
But Manny.
Yeah. Excellent point. He insists on staying a shortstop, or at least he has said this. Now, his contract is up, so is he going to be a rental, right? I mean, this is what teams are going to have to figure out what they're going to get back for him. And to your point about dealing him last year, that was the upside, right? To deal him when he's under team control.
Yeah.
Now, the Orioles were still contending last year. They were not, maybe they weren't built to win the World Series, but you had an 88-year-old owner. And so these are some of the dynamics that behind the scenes of any business or sports franchise. An 88-year-old owner, now 89, who's never seen his team win the World Series, and he's going to die. So you want to keep Manny Machado.
Spoiler
because
alert.
The window is open.
Let's be honest. We're all headed that way, right?
Yeah, but
Don't think about it. I'm going to live forever.
Well, it depends on, you know, whether you're marking time by before or after they win the World Series.
Yeah, there you go. So you win the title and you're all set to roll. I with the news today that the Yankees and Red Sox are now involved more so in a bidding war, I think
it's everybody.
To be quite honest,
it's every day.
And that's better. The more teams involved, Joe Ostrowski, the better off it is possibly for the Cubs themselves.
The Red Sox don't have the prospects, though, do they?
I don't feel it, no.
No one has the prospects to make up for how good this player is.
Nothing
will satisfy me.
2 months.
4 plate appearances a night.
But think about it, too. The way that you're... I mean, if the Milwaukee Brewers wanted to push all in the way they did in 08...
I think they're ready to.
That starts an arms race. And if you can get, if you're the Cubs, and just kind of trying to manipulate this as best you can, you get somebody else to bid higher than what that Brewers team has, the better off you're
going
to be.
If you can do one, are you going Manny Machado or are you going a 1 or 2?
Who am I in that situation?
Number 2 starter. You're the Brewers.
I'm the Brewers in that situation? I'm getting an arm. I'm getting an arm in that situation because I think that's going to last you longer. I mean, Jimmy Nelson's coming back, but what's he going to give you? I mean, it's a fair question. It's a lot like the Cubs question with you, Darvish.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
See, I get the feeling that Joe would rather have the Brewers push all in for Manny Machado just for, I don't know, chaos to reign and trade deadline extravaganza to happen. And I don't think that would upset Rich Campbell, who's in for Dan this morning, at all. I just, to be quite honest,
I probably would go over the top and say, yeah, let's knock down this lineup and just roll. And we have the great defense all season long, and we have the great bullpen. That they've been all right with the starting pitching. We're asking for 5 innings. You add Machado to that team, it is scary.
It is scary. You got to convince him to play third base or just say the hell with it and let him roll at shortstop. I know Orlando Arcia has not
so
panned out the way the Brewers. He's so much more valuable at third base. And what it does, fellas, is it puts that NL Central into a real boat race, because that Brewers team has been, I think, much better than people allowed for. I mean, the bullpen has stuck up for itself, but there's a question as to what usage looks like with Josh Hader, with Jeremy Jeffress, with Corey Knebel. There's questions about how long you can manage all those arms together, pitching all those serious innings, high leverage innings.
And Manny has playoff experience. He'll hit for you in October. If they could get him to play third, then he's saving runs for you.
It is funny. We just kind of overlook the Brewers and, oh, the Cubs, because the last 3 years they've dominated the second half, well, they're going to do it once again because they're the Cubs. They don't win the division. Look at what's happening elsewhere.
Stay out of that one game.
Yeah, and, okay, which team in the NL East is completely going to fade away? One of them probably will, right? But Atlanta, Philly, they don't seem to be going anywhere. Atlanta might be a team that's very aggressive. They have the prospects.
If I'm Atlanta, I do get aggressive because of how young that lineup is. I mean, if you're going to worry about fades, worry about young players who haven't been there before. You know, you talk about people had mentioned Aaron Judge and the fade after that home run derby, right? Well, that was,
yeah.
What is so young in his major league career? I know it's a little bit overage for a rookie, but like, let's look at those reasons for players to kind of, you know, wane a little bit in the second half. And I suppose if you're going to go ahead and supplement offenses, you could do much worse than Manny Machado. You're just going to have to pay through the nose.
Now, you're not bringing in Manny to be your clubhouse leader, your guy putting his arm around inexperienced players here.
No, you are not.
So you're bringing him in to rake, and he'll do it for you. And you just got to take that for what it's worth.
What if you're the Brewers, and okay, we're going to part with some of our top guys, but we want Britton too. Now that's
two for one stop.
That's a move What do they have?
It's four in the top 60, four prospects in the top 60. And that doesn't count Orlando Arcia if you still believe in that young shortstop who was one of the top prospects in their organization, if not a top 25 guy. I mean, that gets as expensive gets. And I'm good on, by the way, a lot of people have been writing about Keon Broxton and the trade value that he has or doesn't have. The guy can play defense, but he has yet to prove to hit. I understand the exit velocities are high, but if you want a centerpiece around Keon Broxton, more power to you. Best of luck with that. Best of luck.
Yeah, they just keep it. Maybe it's like the old Cardinal way. It feels like the Brewers just keep finding guys. They just keep coming through. Wait, who is this guy? Aguilar? He has how many home runs already? What is going on? And it's worked what they did in free agency and trade in the offseason, too. Lorenzo Cain's been a fantastic addition.
That he has. Trade deadline's going to be interesting. It is heating up as we get closer and closer. We'll get some phone calls when we get back. 312-644-6767. Buddy's on the line. We'll see what he's up to. Segment brought to you by Walgreens. Walgreens is here for all your diabetes needs. Stop by today to consult with your pharmacist and get trusted advice and tips about your diabetes medications and testing supplies. Rich Campbell is in for Dan Bernstein today. I'm Connor McKnight. Dan's out for the rest of the week, back on Monday, so we get a chance to not only dive into some of the baseball madness that's going on, but also check in on the Chicago Bears. That's Rich's beat. So we'll check in with really a coaching staff that is juxtaposed against itself, offensively and defensively some.
It's really interesting how they've structured this, right? Everything on the defensive side is about continuity. Everything offensively is about change. And yet, they expect the same great results out of both sides. Sort of an interesting way to build it. And frankly, their best option after coming out of last season.
We'll get into that at 11. Your phone calls next. He's Rich. I'm Connor. 670 The Score.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
Bernstein and McKnight, 670 The Score. I'm Connor. Rich Campbell in for Dan. Packed morning this morning. Jay and Rick just shoved a whole bunch of show into our day. Show. Already talked with Jed Hoyer. We spoke with Len Casper. Chris Ranji coming up at 11:40. Joe Maddon at noon. Jed Hoyer was kind enough to let us know that, yeah, things have checked out just fine on Chris Bryant's shoulder, and the expectation is that, barring something completely unlikely, that he'll be in Joe's lineup when we talk to him at noon. Done a lot of Cubs, did a lot of trade deadline stuff. Joe Ostrowski kind enough to hang out of the Hit and Run show and going to give his thoughts on that trade market as well. We'll head out to the phone lines now. For the first time in the show, you're free to call in 312-644-6767. It's Buddy, Highland Park. What's up, Buddy?
Yes, guys. You know what? I've been thinking about the Chicago White Sox, and about the White Sox. No one talks about them anymore because they're playing so bad and they're going through this rebuild thing. But you know what? There's a team that... What has Don Cooper done for this team lately? That's number one. Number two, Rick Renteria, I think he doesn't seem to have enough fire in him. And I think the Sox need a new pitching coach.
Hey, fired up.
And campaign to get him fired up and bring Ozzie Guillen back. It sounds crazy.
Okay. All right. It does sound crazy. It does.
Put some fans in the seats.
Right.
Ozzie's a good
manager. People want to get out there to watch Ozzie.
And they should go after Manny Machado and get rid of Michael Kopech. All their minor leaguers are hurt. Thanks.
Buddy. Buddy.
Did you just have post-game PTSD?
Oh, my God. I feel like this is – and I don't know the voice. I really thought – like, okay, I've – Buddy and I have spoken before. In another radio life, he and I have talked. We have to have. And I guess in a way we have, Buddy and I. I guess in a way we've taken that call before.
I get that the Sox fans have grievances.
Yes. Grievances are fine.
Yes.
You've got a bad baseball team, but they've – over and over again, describe to you the
correct
design of having a bad baseball team for now. And it's shocking to me. It really is. It's completely shocking to me to see as many who have completely flipped on what's been going on.
Mm-hmm.
There's healthy skepticism, to be sure. Michael Kopech has gone through some stuff personally at AAA this year. He has also lacked a lot of command, so he is no longer the shining knight that will arrive into the rotation at the major league level so far this season. That's understandable. But the idea that we have to, in this town particularly, hammer down the idea that development isn't linear over and over again, it makes my brain want to explode. We've seen evidence of this time and time again. Yes, prospects are hurt. And you know what you don't do is trade hurt prospects. Two reasons. One is you can't. The other is you can't. How are you doing this?
So are you
magically making, hey, Rich, you're an Orioles fan. Let me offer you a hurt Michael Kopech, Mike Rodolfo, who's going in for Tommy John, and oh, what the hell, I don't know, pick another hurt prospect for you. I'd like Manny Machado in return.
I'm not going to give him to you.
I'm going to
bit him off to the Yankees.
I don't think you are.
It is a thankless job for Rick Renteria to oversee what basically amounts to a cruise ship trying to leave the dock. You know, this is not a sports car getting off the starting line, right? It just takes so much to get this in the right direction. And if you're captaining that with no results, you can't gauge it, right? I mean, you're only looking at incremental minor league progress for some of these players. It's tough to go through 162 days a year.
It is tough. I mean, and it's a tough ask for White Sox, especially after last night and looking at how things ballooned out of shape in that one, 14-2 to the Cardinals. I understand it. I understand the frustration in that. That said, you know, if you're going to take shots at Don Cooper, I mean, best of luck. He'll come after you as soon as he's back from surgery. He'll come after you. And sure, there are worthy criticisms of where Lucas Giolito has been this season. There are worthy criticisms of Carson Fulmer and what he was unable to do in the major league rotation for a second time around. Let's call it a second time, even though really it was a first full time. That's a first round pick. You know, I mean, that's a dude out of Vandy who was one of the best collegiate pitchers in baseball, best pitchers in collegiate baseball. There we go. I've got the phrase. I'm my own cruise ship trying to get out of the dock. But there are worthy criticisms there. I understand that. That said, look at the depth through the system. Look at how many organizations would trade their system for yours.
Orioles.
Jesus. I mean, find a prospect.
Yeah.
Find one.
Yeah. Above high A, you can't.
Find one.
Yeah.
Chance Cisco is now there on that roster, and that guy had been trumpeted as a top dude for a long time. Trey Mancini, I like. He hasn't had quite the season he's wanted to. This is a White Sox organization that is full of potential answers, and guys get hurt. I mean, it's the fact that Mike Rodolfo was able to, and for those who aren't as plugged in as whatever, one of the big international signings a handful of years ago, signed as a 16-year-old, had the elbow issue in spring, and all of a sudden was not going to be able to play. They were able to stave that off for a little bit. He was able to DH, and now it's an issue that's ballooning. He's out for the season. He's going to have Tommy John surgery. There's a couple of prospects who have had Tommy John. What's the dude's name with the, oh yeah, Gleyber Torres. Like this is a doable thing. There are understandable worries to be sure, but to bail on this whole operation it's insane to me.
All right. So maybe Buddy is not the proper gauge, right, of the pulse of that fan base. But it is about setting expectations, right?
And
I think to your point, the White Sox have been very clear about what they are, and we know what they are. And to your point about development not being linear, Kopech is a good example, right? A player who admittedly has his own mental hurdles can benefit from some rocky outings.
Fail in the minors.
Exactly.
Fail in the minors. Do it there. Fail hard, too. Like lay down and look absolutely awful. You learn stuff from that. I mean, we've seen prospects before that hadn't had that happen to them, and in some cases, it's very difficult to pick yourself back up in the major leagues once you've got your 0 for, you know, double-digit number, whatever it happens to be. And if you want development, if you want something to be looking at the major league level, you've seen some of it. And I understand it's not all these well-rounded players, but the fact that Yoelmer Sanchez has become a very versatile and reliable everyday player, the fact that, you know, whether you like Charlie Tilson's exit velocities, which are low at times, the dude's found hits. And the fact that he's healthy after the injury he went through is pretty remarkable. You've got Daniel Palka, who hits the ball as hard as anybody. And yes, 222 batting average and a 272 on base is a little tough to live with. But you found things to throw into a major league roster. The bullpen's been horrendous. I mean, by and large, it has struggled at times. And we'll see. I mean, as much as that trade deadline is a very interesting one to me, the White Sox have some options. And Rick Hahn's going to have a couple of conversations with reporters, I would imagine, over the next few days, because he usually does, especially coming back from the All-Star break. Avi Garcia is down on the disabled list again with a hamstring strain. And that's quite unfortunate for him and for the ball club, because he had been hitting some in his 10, 12 games back, I think it was, handful of homers. Jose Abreu was in a season-worst slump heading into a trade deadline that he could be a marketable commodity. AL first baseman, as is, it's one of the worst. I think, what was I reading? It's like 70% worse, the first baseman crop in the American League,
yeah,
than the average first base in American League baseball. Jose Abreu was your all-star, despite for a month and better not putting anything together.
Yeah, there's like six first basemen in the NL that you would put as an all-star, you know, quote all-star
before Jose.
Yeah,
we've seen him screw himself into slumps before, and we've seen him hit it out because or get out of those slumps because of the bat to ball ability that he's got. But with the Sox, I'm fascinated to see if their deadline moves things around. I know Rick Hahn has said that, you know, it's going to be a little quieter, and how could it not be than last deadline?
Right.
I mean, my God, you shipped everybody out and brought in a whole bunch of talent, or a whole bunch of young talent. But the idea that you were able to find a couple of bullpen arms, a couple of dudes here and there that you could kind of rebuild, remake, and throw back into a deadline, you know, that was a viable one. That's a risky one still.
But you look at a pitcher like Lucas Giolito, right? Mm-hmm. And that's the type of guy who needs to flash more,
yeah,
just to keep you on the line, right? Just to keep you with the big picture perspective that everything is going to be okay.
He's the center point,
right,
of what exists in the rebuild right now. There's no doubt about it.
Right.
And the fact that he got off to the start that he had with a walk rate that was only the only walk rate that was even close to Tyler Chatwood's to start the season, or even now. And really, it's not close because the difference is like, you know, twice as much. But you've slowly seen Lucas kind of get some stuff back. You've slowly seen, I wouldn't say there are flashes, but there's been a little bit more consistency and a little bit more battle in some of his starts. But I think that the basis of frustration, because prospects get hurt, and to me, yeah, that's frustrating, but that's not something you have to wear as a White Sox fan. That's not something that everybody gets hurt in this game. The frustration that's wearable, that's that I understand most is Giolito's struggles to begin this year, to in the first half of this season. That is a tangible stumbling block for them.
Then just remind yourself he's 23, right? I mean, they are very young. They are very young. He wouldn't be the first pitcher to figure it out, right?
Oh,
now,
no, not at
asking
all.
For patience for that can be a tough ask when you haven't won and you're losing every night.
And the way you're losing, too. I mean, some of the games get out of hand and get out of hand fast.
But Buddy did not like it.
No, Buddy was not a fan.
No.
Have been a fan of your coverage this offseason.
I'm a fan of that segue right there.
Yeah, well, you know, it's every once in a while I get one on me. Thank you. There's applause all around. But you have been writing a couple of things.
I get the whole thing. The whole funkitude to it. All right.
There's no confetti falling.
There isn't confetti. Yeah. Was this not set up before the show? Did we not write this out? No, Rich Campbell has been writing a couple of preview articles about your Chicago Bears who break camp. What is it, a week from tomorrow? Or start
Thursday.
Camp a week from?
They report Thursday, July 19th.
There you go. A week from tomorrow. Oh, you will, your freedom is taken from you, my man.
It's gone. Just ask my wife about it.
But you've been writing some interesting stuff as it pertains to Matt Nagy and the rest of its coaching staff. We're going to push the midway to tomorrow because we've got such a packed show with Chris Ronge and Joe Maddon still to come. 11:40 for Ronge and then noon for Cubs manager Joe Maddon. I wanted to dig in some on the Bears and some of the stuff they've been writing to set up this season when we come back at 11. He's Rich Campbell. I'm Connor McKnight. Rich is in for Dan. It's the Bernstein and McKnight Show, 670 The Score.